Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
I want to hear from Jed, though, because I need to hear what the Cubs plan to do to get to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the playoffs are an expectation and not a surprise and not a one-year thing. And that's the goal, is not a one-year thing and pushing all in for a year. It's about how do we build it up to sustain that. And I think we're on the right path at doing that.
You're running in place. Are you better this year right now than you were a year ago?
I will say they are. I would count on improving my team, going out and spending money to improve my team, and then having the bonus of young guys coming up.
You know, when I think about our season and where we are, you know, I'm disappointed, you know, but optimistic. I think anytime you set a goal for yourself and you fall short of that goal, I think there's disappointment. I think from the top down this year, the expectation was to play in the playoffs, and we didn't get there. And we have to be better.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Come on.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I watched the Jed thing maybe 2-3 times. I listened to it live, but then I went home and it was on the Marquee Network a couple times. I watched it a couple times over. I'm not sure there was any news, David. I'm not sure I learned anything that I think there was. It was interesting, a lot of different elements of it, but nothing really jumped out at me as kind of knocking me down with, wow, they're doing that? It just didn't play that way.
Hey, I don't think that I watched it and felt like I learned anything I didn't know, which right. I think sometimes you want to hear in these end of the year press conference, state of the organization addresses. I will say this, watching it, I had a reaction I didn't expect. We heard a little bit about him going in and talking about, well, you just don't want to do it for 1 year. You want to have a sustained success.
Yes.
I have to say, I was listening yesterday thinking I'd take the 1 year. I'd take the all in. I'd take that approach. I want the Cubs to get back to the postseason. It's been too long. I don't count 2020. That wasn't a season-long, summer-long kind of up and down, ebb and flow, in and out. That was a fourth season, the best of a bad situation, post-COVID. No fans. It didn't feel like baseball. I want the Cubs to get in, and I don't really care how.
I don't want them to rely on everyone to over meet their expectations, whatever that means.
Well, play above their typical expected results. It sounds very analytic-y. It's not a word, but it sounds very much a philosophy steeped in analytics, wanting people to outperform and to be better than their expected outcome.
All that means is exactly what we watched and what we know happened, which is they didn't. That they needed on a particular night kind of everyone to be good, and it didn't happen enough. They needed everyone to kind of top out at all times, and that's not ever going to be a realistic approach. And they acknowledged that every team left in the playoffs has a 5-WAR player. And their 5-WAR player is, I guess, Cody Bellinger, but he didn't have a 5-WAR season. But he may opt out because he's going to have so many teams running for him.
Well, a couple things there. Put another way, I think that the Cubs needed somebody to have a career year, and it didn't happen. A lot of these teams in the playoffs have had guys, you know, in the midst of career years, or guys who are typically 5-WAR players. Cody Bellinger would be the guy that you would think if everybody maxed out that his WAR would be the highest. His ceiling is the highest. He didn't do that. It's not all on him, though. I think that was he was gently trying to say, is that Cody Bellinger had a season that was good enough for him to opt into free agency, but not good enough to carry the Cubs at key times.
Was it?
Well, in the world, I think Jed was preparing people for the way that Scott Boras will view this season, and our expectation should be that Scott Boras will view it good enough to test the market, because teams out there will give Cody Bellinger more money than maybe the Cubs will. I think yesterday coming out of that, I'm not optimistic that the Cubs are going to match Cody Bellinger's asking price. I think that he's probably good as gone, may change my mind and may have different cues to read moving forward, but it didn't sound like a team expecting to bring Cody Bellinger back. If he's going to the open market, chances are he's leaving.
Well, he's got a player option. If he chooses to exercise his option, then he'll stay. If he chooses to search, maybe I'm opting out. I don't think they're bringing him back.
Well,
I mean, I don't know. If it were you, would you give him more money than he's scheduled to make? Scheduled to make $27.5 million. Doesn't that seem about right?
Well, that's my point, is that if he hits the open market, I think he's good as gone. I don't think that he's going to come into terms with the Cubs at a price that's higher than that because he didn't meet those expectations this year. For a lot of reasons, it wasn't all on him. He was injured on and off. I think Pete Crow Armstrong in time will be that five war player. He could be. I think he could be, but he's not there yet. Jed Hoyer, I have a lot of respect for Jed. You know, I like him. We both do. And I think that the job he has done has been somewhat, I don't want to say predictable, but you do know that he's going to go in things a certain way. And there's going to be a certain level of success or failure. He approaches this job, his job, like the president of an 83-win team. You need to swing for the fences here this offseason.
I think they need to get better. I think they need to. I don't know if they will swing for the fences, but I think they need to get better, and I think they need to do that with a member of the pitching staff, a member of the bullpen, and frankly, they need at least one more player.
They need more slug.
They do need more slug.
They need more slug, as they say.
What can you explain to me? And I did not. Maybe I'm not following close enough. But when did Wrigley become this weird every other year ballpark? Where apparently, when they were on the road, the wind was blowing out, and then when they got home, it blew in. I was confounded by that. And I get it. They got all the numbers to back it up that the field played seventh in Major League Baseball a year ago. It was that big a boom box, band box, home run launching site. And then this year was 29th.
I thought that was interesting and not in a good way. We used the word interesting and so to cover a lot of ground and carry a lot of weight. I thought that was something that sounded very excusey.
I just want to know what changed things.
Well, I don't know.
It was the weather?
Can we get skilling? I don't know if we can do that without getting into a meteorological discussion.
But I want to know, did you build something?
Climate change.
Did something start with climate
I'm sorry.
Change. You had to go.
You're going in that direction.
No, but I'm not goading you. I am amused by that now the weather, sometimes the winds just shift. Like, really? Like, if you go away, did you know this? Like, if you leave your home for a weekend, you could have the door blown in. But if you come home, it'll never.
I understand the absurdity of how it sounds. I also don't want to be a hypocrite because you do look at, I'm looking back. My reaction to the Yankee series, for instance, and then maybe I think it was the Red series. The Yankees were here. And nobody hit a home run?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
But David, what I'm asking is, did the scoreboard shift and move somehow, or did they block some wind with something? Did a crane get up? There's no cranes in Chicago. I want to know if anything happened to disrupt the way the ballpark used to play. Or if it's all, see what I'm saying?
Yes, like, but that's not realistic.
But I mean, it seems about as logical.
So you think that maybe some sort of building development project in Lakeview or Wrigleyville or something that affected the wind patterns on the north side?
A butterfly flaps its wings and the ball no longer goes out of Wrigley.
See, I think this is a good off-season project. The Cubs can hire a consulting firm to study that.
It seems as likely that's the case as whatever was the reason that was given.
It could be one of those fluky weather patterns, one of those fluky summers. I don't know. I don't want to as tempting as it is just to poke fun and mock
it. I'm not mocking
and it.
It
is. No, it's fun.
I'm fascinated by it.
But it is fascinating. But I do remember my reaction after the Yankee series, especially after Giancarlo Stanton hit one that should have been out of the park.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it got knocked down. And I thought, that seems to be happening more than I noticed before. And it'd be really interesting. Here's what surprises me. It's one thing for us to discuss it, and maybe even, you know, Dustin, it would be a great subject for a podcast on Fly the W, one off-season podcast. I'm surprised that the president of baseball operations brought it up and addressed it to the extent that they did.
It blew my mind because, you know, okay, the ball is juiced. That's the answer. They had the poor children that were handcuffed to the tables stitched tighter this year. I don't know why that would be the case. Wouldn't both teams be suffering the same issue as you're saying when the Yankees come in and they got all the sluggers?
I think they would. I think a lot of teams would. Mother Nature must be a Brewers fan. I don't know.
How do you go from 7th to 29th without there being like a legitimate reason that something happened? That's my question. And if it really is, like he kind of at one point implied, well, we're in a ballpark that, you know, from year to year, you don't know whether it's going to, how it's going to play.
Ian Happ was on the midday show suggesting similar things.
Yes.
And I wondered about that. And here's the big picture look at it. You wonder if a team believes something.
At what point does it
become psychological and a barrier that you can't clear?
Right. A self-fulfilling prophecy.
It is, because every time you go to the plate, there's so much in your head and hitting is so hard already that if you're considering that as part of the obstacle that is in your way, how do you get it out of your way until you leave the ballpark and go on the road? I don't know.
It was a wild moment in the thing.
It was a pretty interesting departure from what really got in the way of the Cubs getting to the postseason and getting back there and frankly winning a playoff game. And it made me think about all of the prospects that they have and all of the hope that we have seen at the minor league level. You know, you see, we know the names. We know their averages. Casey and Shaw and Alcantara.
Sure.
And PCA is already here and developing. Molly, I'd be willing to package somebody in a deal to get somebody who's going to hit 45 home runs in this ballpark that's challenged, that has all these weather problems that keep the ball in the ballpark. But I want somebody like Pete Alonso or whoever.
I love the idea of having – you know, what is it, 7 or 8 of the top prospects in baseball? It's a great idea. The problem with prospects is, when do they graduate? When do they move beyond prospect and then become major leaguer? And how long does that take to become all-star? And how long? You know, I mean, get Juan Soto, okay? Because that guy seems like he's already gotten there.
The thing about sustaining success is first achieving it.
Juan Soto seemed like he was a prospect for like 5 minutes.
At one point in time.
But he was like a young all-star at 19 or something.
Not to get ahead of ourselves, but how about the guy that was in the Juan Soto trade last night that pitched for your Padres?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Michael King.
Yeah.
He's the real deal. 12 strikeouts. What a dominant performance for your Padres.
I like they're now my Padres.
I'm so jealous that I did not pick them now. After one game, I'm having all these.
My Astros looked like they were getting back in the game, but they didn't.
I know I didn't have the same reaction to your Astros pick.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like a little bit.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, but the Padres thing really was inspired.
Thank you, buddy.
Michael King though was the guy at hard to be any more dominant than he was last night. I know we're getting off track. I want to get back to the Cubs because the Juan Soto conversation will be valid and applicable once free agency begins. And you wonder if the Cubs will be in the mix. I doubt it. I think they should probably have definite plan B, C, D, or E.
Yeah.
When you're talking about a trade, they're going to have to be creative. If they're planning without Cody Bellinger, which I think it sounded like they are, Vlad Guerrero, that could be a deal. Somebody like that. You need somebody's going to hit the ball out of the ballpark.
Can you still do that at Wrigley?
I think so.
Okay.
I hope so. Wrigley Field.
It was just.
It's Wrigley Field.
You know, but we talked about it toward the end of the year. I mean, it took us a while to kind of jump on it. But I think in the same week, you heard Ian Happ talk about it here on the station. And then you heard Craig Counsell address it just toward the last month of the season. And that had really been the first time I'd stopped and thought about, wow, there really has been no slug.
I want to give credit to the Midday Show. They had this statistic yesterday. Mm. Dan and Marshall were talking about this. There were 57 games in which the Cubs did not hit a home run this year. 57. I don't know how many of those the breakdown is at Wrigley in because of all the cranes that you mentioned or whatever. Whatever's getting in the way of those weather patterns. Okay, 57 games in which the Cubs did not hit a home run. The record in those 57 games, 17-40.
Yeah.
That
ball
is...
Ball goes far, team goes far.
That's very oversimplifying the problem, but I think that is a big part of the problem. Cubs can't hit the ball out of the ballpark anymore.
Yeah, and something to do with the wind. no, it is, but it is flummoxing. To consider that. It is very difficult not to kind of throw your hands up a little bit. But it was interesting to hear what was said yesterday. As I said to you, I didn't feel like there was a laid out plan as to, I mean, if the plan is that everybody do better than you thought they would, that's not a plan. That's more like
a
hope and a
prayer. We wanted to hear, I don't want to speak for you, but I think that when we sit in this seat and the fans maybe watching and listening at home, I think what you want to hear typically in a situation like the Cubs are in from the team president is that heading into the final year of his contract is more of a go for broke type mentality.
Yes.
A sense of urgency that's reflected by we're going to do whatever is necessary to get back to the postseason because it's time. And it's been too long since we've been out of there. And I know that we're challenged to hit home runs right now, but we're not going to be next year because our roster is going to be different. Somehow, it's going to be different.
But what we heard was, you know, we're really in a great place with our contracts. They're really clean, and there's not a lot of dead money. And, you know, we got a ton of good young players, and they're on the way up. And they're these are things that I already know. I already understand that. I just want to know, well, then how do you jump? How, if you're the highest paid team in the division, do you win the division? How do you finish 10 games over instead of 10 games behind the Milwaukee Brewers?
How do you fulfill your manager's ambition? How do you make it that Craig Counsell next year is not complaining openly? Publicly,
well,
about not having a 90-win roster.
I think it's your ambition, too. If you went and hired him, then presumably you wanted to win. You wanted to go out and get – that's the thing.
So you're right.
So here's our plan to win.
Why is the team president sounding less ambitious than the manager?
It was
– because as much as we respect Jed, and if he were on the show this morning, I'd be asking him the same question.
Right.
Why does Craig Counsell sound like he has greater ambition for this franchise than you do? Because that's what I heard yesterday. Well, Craig Counsell can talk about wanting a 90-win roster every year because he's right. They should. He's like talking – that was Craig from Whitefish Bay.
Yeah.
I'll hang up and listen for my answer. I want a 90-win roster.
Yeah.
Jed yesterday saying, well, you know, I'm pretty happy with the way things are. 83 wins 2 years in a row.
You did get that feel that he was seeing something and failing to articulate it in the way that everybody else would see it. And I think he was kind of saying, you know, hold fast without actually saying that. And, maybe Belly will option out and then we'll have money to spend.
Well, I don't disagree with you. It's one thing for us to react that way to what we heard from Jed and be maybe less than satisfied in hearing that urgency. I'm so curious on how those conversations go between manager and chief executive, because I want to know how Craig Counsell is interpreting Jed's clinging to the status quo. When everything's okay, if only guys would outperform the contract next year, we're going to be fine.
And can I ask this question? This may be a really, I will put on my dunce cap because I know what the man said. And he said that barring these three positions that are to be filled, that everybody is invited back. Everyone will be invited back. And I just want to know, do we know that's the case? In other words, let's say somebody gets fired, or let's say some people become available. Let's say all of a sudden you got a chance to upgrade over your manager, who is our guy, something that happened a year ago. What if there was somebody that all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, you know, we said these guys were coming back, but we got three new
guys.
You're
talking about your staff now.
I'm talking about his staff.
His staff.
I believe what I heard was that they were making some changes, but they were kind of modest changes. The first base coach, the assistant hitting coach, and the bullpen coach, and then the strength and conditioning guys. What if like five people became available that he was in love with and always wanted to work with? Does that change anything? Is that a lockdown fact that there's no hiring? Because a year ago, we thought the manager was coming back, and that changed.
Well, I don't think that, number one, any move of significance. You're talking about Tommy Hottovy, really.
Well,
right?
Not necessarily Tommy.
Dustin Kelly, the hitting coach.
Yes. Someone of that ilk, someone of
that's a Craig Counsell decision.
Right.
It's got to be. And I don't think he knows. We haven't heard from him yet.
Let's say the Brewers, let's say they end up losing this series and they're out immediately. And all of a sudden, three or four guys are available that he might want to work with. And I don't know who it would be.
Then he'll bring them on. And then the conversation will shift.
Okay.
And everybody will accept that Craig Counsell wanted his guys and didn't have his guys the first season. Mm-hmm. And this was a growing learning experience for a first-year manager, which I think that as disappointing as that is to acknowledge, that is what the season really turned out to be. Craig Counsell getting to know the Cub organization, what he likes, what he doesn't like, what he needs to change, who he wants to work with. And so it looks like, based on the initial reports of some of the staff changes, we know who he doesn't want to work with.
Yes.
I hope that means the guys coming back are guys he's comfortable with, but that is also a fluid situation.
That's what my point is.
Yeah.
I'm not singling out any one person. You just don't know who becomes available. And, you know, if you're not under contract, I would be concerned because there's change in the air. Whenever you go through a season and you do not meet the ambition of whether it be the owner, the general manager, the manager, then there is that possibility that there will be change.
It's a very interesting time, I think, at Clark and Addison because of how – would you say that Jed sounded content yesterday?
I think Jed – listen, I got a lot of time for Jed. I respect Jed. I think Jed – emphasized more the positive and the optimistic than he did the fact that they did not get it done.
That's on brand for him, though.
That's on brand. But in that case, then yes.
I guess I want to put it this way then. The sense of urgency that maybe we feel outside of the team headquarters there, I think that's also reflected throughout baseball when you look at a franchise like the San Francisco Giants, who have been more successful more recently than the Cubs in the postseason, just fired the president of their baseball operations and replaced him with Buster Posey, an unknown, or not an unknown certainly in baseball, but untested at that level and in that job. And I don't think the Cubs are anywhere close to wanting to, or last year going into this season, to doing that, to taking that chance. Jed Hoyer's got 1 year left on his deal. And they haven't been to the playoffs since he's been basically in charge in a full season. It's time. That urgency exists. They're not going to be changing number one executives.
Did you get that sense?
That
there is urgency and that he's on a one-year deal and he's gone?
I did not get that sense, which was surprising to me.
Well,
which is a little surprising to me. But I think also you're talking about a guy who is very comfortable with where he is in his career and very confident that he's going to be able to do what's necessary to bring the Cubs back to the playoffs. He's got that inner confidence. He has had a successful career. I get that. I just think that you want to hear more of a specific plan and maybe a little bit more uneasiness about what they just went through. Did you want him to sound more miserable?
I'm
asking myself. It's a rhetorical question. I wonder if people wanted to hear more disgust from what they just accomplished rather than invoking maybe weather conditions at a ballpark that typically does play big.
Yes.
Now it's playing small.
These are fun things to ponder and talk about, and we will play you different clips, and we'll get into this as we move forward. There is a lot to go over. The MLB playoffs have begun. We'll get into some talk about that. The winter sports teams are up and running and available for your perusal, should you be lucky enough to live in the right area with the right cable box.
It'll happen. Patience, people.
You know,
the Chicago Sports Network has launched, and you will eventually, in time, be able to watch your favorite teams.
It just annoys the heck out of me that I have to drive to Notre Dame to watch it, or I got to go to Rockford to see the Blackhawks. That's how it feels right now. But hopefully that'll all be resolved. And we've got a lot to get to. We'll get to all of it. Pick Six is next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What was your biggest takeaway after hearing Jed Hoyer explain why the Cubs finished with 83 wins for the second straight year and missed the playoffs yet again? Not having made the postseason in a full season since 2018, how much pressure does Jed Hoyer face now?
Yeah, I was surprised at the lack of urgency, if I can say it that way. I'm not saying that he doesn't feel it. But I thought he was very calm about everything. I think the reality is you just finished with 83 wins with two different managers, and you upgraded significantly. And I understand he said that's why they didn't give Craig a one-year contract. But if you had, if you hadn't fired David Ross last year, wouldn't you have had to fire him this year if you finished 83 wins again? And I'm not saying anybody's in trouble, and I'm not calling for jobs or anything like that. It's just I did not hear the articulation of how you go about ensuring that you're going to be the 90-win team that the manager talked about being on a year-in, year-out basis. And I think that instead – Jed sort of took the avenue of, well, this is what we're in the effort of doing right now. We're attempting to do that, and to do that, everybody has to live up to their projections. And by the way, only three teams were projected to win over 90 games at the beginning of the year, and that's just sort of the reality of where you are in baseball. And if you notice that our salary cap structure is really good, and we've got all these young players come in, so we are building ourselves up to be just that. It did not have that like kind of thunderbolt moment, like, you know, and when we get Ohtani, we will win there wasn't that feeling that they've got to be in on everyone. The very fact that you got so many guys that are five-win players for every playoff team would imply that you better get one of those. And that wasn't the takeaway from that news conference.
My takeaway was he kept talking about the youth and the currency of the youth and the young players and having seven guys in the top 100, and they're coming. And I think he's going to try to figure out how to get them up here sooner than later. And he thinks that they are very well set up. And we, as fans, or at least me as a fan, should be very excited. And I don't know why that should make me excited. I wanted a follow-up there. Why? When Cub fans should be excited, why?
I think I heard a guy talk like he knows something the rest of us don't. And I feel like Jed Hoyer feels confident in the way that he has put together this organization because of the reasons Dustin just referred to. Jed Hoyer is proud of the talent in the Cubs organization. He sounded like an executive who is counting on that talent to change the story and change the results in Chicago, where they need to be back in the playoffs. The Cubs are a big market team that not having big market results. But I feel like we heard from Jed Hoyer, somebody who feels comfortable with the way things are. I wanted him to sound more uncomfortable. I wanted him to make everybody more uneasy. I wanted him to make us feel the way we often do after hearing from Craig Counsell, who is honest to a fault. And I think that Craig Counsell saying the quiet part out loud about needing the 90-win roster was exactly what everybody needed to hear in Chicago. This isn't good enough. The Cubs are running in place. We thought that they were taking a step in the direction of behaving like a big market team when they fired David Ross, beloved Grandpa Rossi, and brought in the guy to do more with more because he did more with less in Milwaukee. Didn't happen. So now there is urgency. 5 years, Jed's under 500, and they really haven't had a playoff victory since he's arrived at the top job. I wanted to hear him sound like that bothered him as much as it bothered the fan base. What I heard was a guy confident that there's talent in the system that will bring them back to the playoffs.
So this is a question I struggle with.
Do you believe Cubs outfielder Cody Bellinger will have a lot of options in free agency, as Jed Hoyer predicted? Do you believe, as the Cubs seem to, that he will opt out of the $27.5 million player option for 2025?
It only takes one team. It only takes one team to convince themselves that Cody Bellinger at $30 million or $75 for three, whatever it is, a better deal. It only takes one team to make that offer to lure him away. And it sounds like the Cubs expect him to put himself in that situation. Scott Boras gambled and lost last offseason. That had to be embarrassing for him. And I think that this offseason, you wonder where the salaries are going. You talk to people in the baseball world, and they have an anticipation because of the way the RSNs have been in decline, because of the television revenues that aren't there the way they used to be, that free agency is going to be something that people don't expect. In terms of salaries, they're not going to be where they typically are. If that's the case, Scott Boras could gamble and lose two off seasons in a row. And maybe Cody Bellinger comes back to the Cubs that way, but could be too late. If he opts out, he becomes a free agent. Jed expects that to happen. I don't know if the Cubs need to do anything. If he opted in, I think I would be happy to have him back, because maybe next year he could outperform his the back of his baseball card and expectations. But I do think he's going to opt out, and I wouldn't be surprised after hearing yesterday if he's with a different team next year.
I hate to say I don't know, but this one's a head-scratcher. I mean, he can play a couple of positions well, but I don't know about very well. He's fine and right. He's fine at first base, but he's not like an all-star at three different positions. He kind of is.
Right field. Didn't he win a gold glove in right field?
When? Back when he was the rookie of the year and the World Series MVP. But, David, that now seems like a career ago. He's fine. But, listen, if somebody wants to pay him over $30 million, give him a $150 million deal or two, great. Go get it. Absolutely. But just because he sticks around at $27 to $30 million, whatever it exactly is, should not handcuff the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, I think the Cubs are kind of stuck with this one. I don't know what else is going to happen. If he wants to go, I would say they probably let him go, as we mentioned earlier. I get it. The guy didn't sign right away. He was kind of a late addition. He didn't start the season the way you'd want. I mean, I get it. I understand that the agent, the super agent, a little embarrassed on this one, has a little egg on his face. So maybe he was going to try to squeeze him to get more money out of him. Didn't sound like they were that interested in that. And I think he better be careful about how he plays this one. So if he's back, if Bellinger's back, I think the Cubs will put on a bright smiley face and they will welcome him and everything is great. But the reality is that you don't need him as much next year as you needed him this year, because you got a young player that has taken over in center field. Because are you going to pay this guy $27 million to be a first baseman, to be a DH, and to play in right field when you decide to kind of rotate him through the I mean I'm not dissing the guy. I really appreciated the season that he had before last year. 2 years ago he was real good. You could use that again. I don't want to be impolite about it, but if he chooses out, that might be the best thing for them. They'll have a ton of money and be able to do a lot.
2019, he won the Gold Glove playing right field for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Take that.
My observations of him in right field this year for the Chicago Cubs, he was fine.
He's better than Suzuki.
Again, David, you're better than Suzuki in right field.
He's a Gold Glover in right field. If you have a Gold Glover in center field, you got a Gold Glover in left field. You got a Gold Glove outfield.
David, that was how many years ago? He wasn't a Gold Glover this year in any position.
That's a big question.
Voice of Bruce Levine, he's here at 825. What was the most surprising result in the opening games of the MLB playoffs? Did anything genuinely surprise you? Do you feel any of these series are effectively over with just one game done?
Well, I mean, the one thing that really did surprise me was the Kansas City Royals winning at Baltimore. I didn't see that one coming, and the way that Baltimore failed to get anything going was surprising to me. Look, these are short series, so there's more impact for one game, but I don't think anybody is eliminated in one game in the playoffs. However, it was weird that all the road teams were winning, right? It was weird that any team, I mean, look what the Mets went through, and then they come out and win? Really? I mean, that was pretty wild. And if the Brewers don't get their act together like before yesterday, it's too late. I just was amazed at the whole momentum thing and the idea that you have a couple teams that are having to play because of a rainout on a Monday and they win on a Tuesday. And I really enjoyed watching all of it, except I have a friend in Baltimore and he was going nuts, and I don't blame him. It was a rough one. I thought that team was going to be better all the way around, and that was not good.
The Mets scoring 8 runs surprised me against the Brewers. That surprised me. I don't think any of these series are effectively over, even though all of them, could end today. We could come in here tomorrow. I would be surprised. I would be surprised if any of them, to be honest, are over tomorrow, except maybe the Padres. Like, I think the Padres could eliminate the Braves, because I think the Chris Sale news, him being scratched from
terrible.
Right. He went from the
terrible
game 2 starter in that doubleheader to the, well, now he'll start game 1 if the Braves could have won game number 1, to getting scratched, just scratching your head, to now out. That might be just too much to overcome, but I believe I think all the series will be game 3s.
Max Fried goes for the Braves because Chris Sale is unavailable. I think you look at the Brewers. Can't believe the Brewers have lost 9 of their last 10 playoff games. 9 of the last 10 in what they're no longer calling Craig Tober in Milwaukee. How do you do that? That's really, I'm a little surprised by the Mets. But the fact that the Tigers and the Royals both won a playoff game yesterday. The Tigers and the Royals, both teams in the White Sox division. The Guardians don't have to play because they're too good to be in this round. So the AL Central, stand up. because they are very good.
But that was the Tigers game, right? That's their pitcher.
Yes.
That's their.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying.
But the Tigers didn't have a game 6 weeks ago.
That's right.
The Tigers game 6 weeks ago was getting ready. They were planning their postseason press conference to tell you why they didn't get to the postseason again. But yesterday, they're good. The Royals 1-0 in the playoffs. Yikes, against that lineup?
Can you believe that?
Wow. A lot of stuff to like. The road teams, though, the biggest takeaway before the Padres did what they did in San Diego, the road teams winning tells me that home field advantage overrated in October.
That's a good question.
Have you thought any more about what Coach Wonstedt said about DeAndre Swift here yesterday?
I'm telling you now, and I'm a broken record, DeAndre Swift is not your best inside runner. Okay. The runs that he gets for two, I believe with all my heart that Roschon or Herbert would be getting four, okay? I just believe that.
Is that obvious to Coach? Do you think it's as obvious to the Bears coaches? Do they agree with this? And how patient do you think they will be with DeAndre Swift?
I think they have 8 million reasons to be patient with DeAndre Swift, and I think they will be. I was surprised Dave was that direct with giving up on DeAndre Swift. And I respect where he's coming from and a lot of people who watch him and come to similar conclusions. I think where I get a little bit, you react to it more is that I don't know when Roschon Johnson became Earl Campbell. I don't know where this suggestion that he is going to be this can't miss downhill runner that's going to get you the tough yard because he's proven. Wait a second. Second year, I don't know that he had a great rookie year. Is he really that good of a runner? I don't know. We haven't seen a lot, but a lot of people believe that Roschon Johnson, the way he is spoken about, he sounds like a great running back. Is he? I don't know. But I don't want to. I'm not ready to give up on DeAndre Swift yet. The Bears are finding their way with the offensive line. I think he could be a big part of their running game still. He is the, I think, whether it's an anomaly or just a different back in that, I think that what you saw on Sunday was he gets, you talk about the lather that he builds up. Maybe he needs a good screen pass or a swing pass or something happened in the passing game in the open field to get him going and feel better about the running inside or outside. But I would think it's premature to give up on DeAndre Swift, even though I love that Dave Wonstedt has and said that, and he doesn't sound like a broken record to me. He's just being honest on what he sees on tape, and I want him to do that.
Well, I think the key is between the tackles. He said between the tackles, and I'm not ready to give Roschon Johnson the ball 20 times, but if you were talking, usually it's the opposite. Your change of pace back is somebody like DeAndre Swift. In this Bears offense, your change of pace back is somebody like Roschon. You know, that's what they're looking for. But again, give him the ball. When you need 2 or 3 yards, give him the ball. I'm fine with it. He runs hard. He's built differently than DeAndre Swift. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting because DeAndre Swift managed 114 yards through the first three games, and he was averaging 1.8 yards a carry. I wonder if he was averaging 0.4 yards a carry after first contact. He's not a guy that runs through a lot of tackles. That is just the reality of it. And what happened in that game is that he hit a hole, he found a hole, and he got a, whatever, 36-yard run. And that changed his season. That changed his numbers. And he had a great game as a result of that. And it helped that he had 7 catches and did well there. But he is not a run-through contact guy. I think that's what Dave is seeing. That is what Dave is saying. And I think that it's very interesting to me because Roschon Johnson, as we all know, started his college career. He was recruited as a quarterback. He goes into Texas, and injuries led them to move him to running back, and he played behind Bijan Robinson for the majority of his career. And then he comes in to the NFL, and he has kind of a straight line style. He's a stand-up kind of guy. So he's a very powerful guy, can get contact and will run over people. And he will gain yards through contact, which is, I think, what Dave meant when he said that the other two guys will get four where he might get two. And I think, Dustin, you're actually correct there. I think he's talking about between the tackles. That's what he said. So I don't know that Roschon Johnson is going to be Earl Campbell or anything like that, but compared to DeAndre Swift, he's kind of Earl Campbell. He can run over people. He can make contact. He's a bigger, stronger dude, and he's got more weight. I mean, I was surprised, honestly, that DeAndre Swift is kind of as light as he is, right? He's not a big, powerful back. He's slight of build. And, you know, this is a guy that's best used in space. And unfortunately, with the Bears' offensive line, he doesn't find himself in space very often. It's interesting.
I mean, it's a great question.
Where are you at with the leadership of the 2024 Bears, whether it's from the eight captains, the coaches, rank and file? Will we learn more about team communication this week, or is that just a subject for losing weeks? What are they going to do about the 10 penalties, including five of the pre-snap variety?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that we heard a lot about their communication. We heard, you know, blow by blow of the meeting with the coach. And I don't know if everybody was following. We kind of got that during the week. It was all over the national broadcast. They were talking about it, and they had details, and they had different stuff than just the it's not Pop Warner. It was kind of weird, man. It didn't play well nationally. It didn't make the Bears look like the most together team with their communication. And, you know, again, you know, feel free, tell us everything that happens. We're always interested. But if I'm in charge of the group, I'd be like, hey, don't be telling everybody everything that happens around here. Try to keep things to yourself a little bit, you know? Maybe don't play up your huge role as captain and great leader and all the rest of it. So I think that is for losing weekends. I think that is more about kind of self-protection, if you will. And I felt like they threw that coach, Shane Waldron, under the bus last week. Maybe he deserved it. Maybe he got the message and maybe he responded to it. But it's coming again. You wait. They lose to Carolina. The Red Rifle has a big game. There's going to be squawking.
There will be squawking. That's a good way to put it. I just, when you have eight captains, do you have one? It's way too many captains. Eight captains is ridiculous. You know, four, six tops. I think four is probably the right number. And then I didn't mind the idea. It was that Eberflus the first year was had when they had like the rotating captain that had like a really good game or made sense because of the team they were facing. There was some type of built-in reason to elevate that person to be the captain that way. There's too many. You need more Indians, okay, and less Chiefs.
And none of it has anything to do with what happens on Sunday in terms of the outcome. You could have 12 captains. It won't affect whether or not you're...
No, the talking has something to do with what happens on Sundays.
The way that communication affects the outcome is if you have a quarterback or an offensive line or wide receivers or tight end or running backs that aren't familiar enough with the cadence to get off the ball when they should, and they're jumping early or they're... That is communication. The stuff that happens during the week is noise. It's just noise. And, you know, the fact that we are... privy to this noise last week is all Mercedes Lewis' fault. He went public with stuff he shouldn't have gone public with. I love it because it's what we do, and we talk about stuff, and it's great for fans and media to get in, you know, in the room with Mercedes Lewis and Shane trembling Shane Waldron and I mean, that's the way he depicted him.
Yes, that's
shame
right.
On him.
Yeah.
So this week, you know what the communication I would have done? Ryan Poles calls Mercedes Lewis into his office. And he tells him to stop talking. Or you want to keep talking, big dog? Just don't bark so loudly and let people know what was said. Because that was where everybody got on board. And in this world of aggregation, it became a national storyline. Because national media who cover the Bears from afar need things that are easy and digestible in little nuggets. You know what's digestible in little nuggets? What Mercedes Lewis said last week about Shane Waldron walking on eggshells and all of the other rhetoric contained in one nice, smooth, easy soundbite. And that can't happen.
How many snaps has that guy played?
Too many. I don't get it.
I'm saying Mercedes Lewis does not play. He's not playing.
I don't understand why he's here. I may be the only guy in town, but I don't understand the fascination here. All he's done this year is create a distraction.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Who is the best defensive player on the new look Bulls now that Alex Caruso has been traded? Is it an obvious answer or something of a work in progress?
I wondered if this was a trick question. Because I do think it's kind of obvious. Isn't Patrick Williams has got to be that guy, right? If there's a guy coming in who's you look at Alex Caruso being gone. Alex Caruso was a guy that guarded everyone from Durant to Russell Westbrook. I mean, who point guards and power forwards. I think Patrick Williams is the guy who has the most defensive versatility right now. It's not Lonzo Ball, who healthy, if that ever happens again, and it likely won't. Lonzo Ball used to be a guy that was elite defensively, all NBA defensive team worthy. But it's got to be Patrick Williams. There's not a big man that even qualifies for being in the conversation. And as far as it might be Io, you know, Io is very, very bold and athletic and defensive minded. But I think it's got to be Patrick Williams. And if it isn't Patrick Williams, the Bulls are in trouble.
Well, based on the dollars, which is a lot of what we've talked about through this whole pick six, is shouldn't it be Max LaVine? I mean, shouldn't he be the best defender? Shouldn't he be the best two-way player since he's a max guy? But to answer the question, work in progress.
I think it is kind of a work in progress because I think that that Io might end up being that guy, but I don't think of him. I remember him as an offensive player in college. I don't think of him as a great. I think he's not a great shooter. Does that mean he's got to be a great defender? Your answer is good. That's a good answer. But Lonzo Ball would have been the answer if he didn't have a new knee. It is probably a work in progress because Caruso is gone and it was basically him and Lonzo in some order. Patrick Williams is probably the best guess about that right now, but that's a hole. They have a hole. They've got to develop that element, and they also probably lost their best big man defensive player. Drummond was probably their best kind of center, rim protector, if you call it that. It's got to be Patrick Williams, but it's I think still a work in progress.
That's not good when the season right around the corner.
That's not good at all.
And nobody on the roster that really you look at as an emerging defensive weapon or even a guy that can give you 8 to 10 minutes as a stopper.
All right, we got the extra point next. We're going to get to it, and it's a fun one. Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
So this big story happens where they think your coach or your coach did, I actually don't know, likes this post about you getting traded. When you heard of that, I guess my first question is how soon did you hear from coach?
Yeah, I haven't heard from him. I haven't talked to him.
All right, what's your reaction to Devontae Adams wanting out of Vegas? Adam Schefter reported Vegas would consider a trade package that would start with a second round pick and additional compensation. Is there any immediate assumption he will wind up with the Jets, or would any team with need come to him?
Well, this is a business decision by Devontae Adams, and he was told to make them, right, by Antonio Pierce. The best business decision by Devontae Adams is demanding a trade to a team that he thinks is going to contend. And this is on brand for Devontae Adams. Now, who's going to want him? Everybody who's a contender.
Yeah,
this guy's a difference maker. This is somebody who puts any given team that you want to plug in there, if they are close in other aspects, over the top. He's expensive. You're going to need cap space. I don't know how many teams would – they'd have to reconfigure their entire cap. Let's talk about the Jets. The Jets have $17 million under the cap. How are they going to make him work? They'll figure it out if they did it. They make the most sense because of Aaron Rodgers. He may be angling for that because of Aaron Rodgers. They certainly could use him because, as we saw the other night, Aaron Rodgers not exactly on the same page with his receivers not named Lazard, and sometimes not even him. So the Jets might be at the top of the pack. Keep an eye on the Kansas City Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs would be willing to give up and should be willing to give up everything that is necessary and outbid anybody, whether it's a second-round draft pick or 2 second-round draft picks or whatever it is, just three-peat. Forget about the future. Mortgage the future. The future's now. You're making history this year if you get Devontae Adams. And you have wide receivers that are going down. You have a void there. Fill it. And he does it. So Chiefs, to me, number one. Jets, number two. After that, the Detroit Lions at $40 million under the cap. Let's hope they don't get involved.
Yeah, the Chiefs scream. It screams Chiefs for everything you just said. And don't even go ahead and give up a first round pick. It's right. Okay.
I think the fact that they're looking for a second plus could slow down the movement of this deal. I don't know. You know, the coach wants him gone. The guy wants out. It's done. His time in Oakland is over. And he's a really good player. And you're right. Everybody should want him. But I wonder how that would look. How do the Chiefs make that deal, man? I mean, it would take some sorcery to figure out how that would happen.
Well, I'll bid everybody.
No, I'm saying fitting it into their cap and everything else. It's not an easy thing to do. Listen, he would improve them so much. It's beyond belief. I mean, it would really be a godsend, especially with, you know, Rashee Rice going down, which is there karma involved in that one? I would say that the Jets may have to make the move because of the quarterback. They may have to do something because it is things are starting to there's some bad signs going on, and they might have to do something to desperately try to make this guy happy, and that would make him very happy because the two of them together were magic. If he goes to the Chiefs, listen, there are going to be a lot of teams that are interested, but it's really, given how much he costs and given what the gymnastics would be with the salary cap, it's got to be a team that's set to win. It's got to be a team that's ready to go immediately. And I don't know who that is right now. I mean, you know, I know teams with the need, and maybe the Chiefs have the greatest need, but I don't know that they're going to be able to pull it off.
The Chiefs have all of their draft picks for 2025 except for their sixth.
Yeah.
They could outbid everybody else in the mix if the Raiders the Raiders have to be willing to trade him within the division. Which is also difficult.
No, it's going to be very hard to do. It's going to be it'll happen because it's already started, but I there'll be like a surprise candidate that'll come out somewhere.
49ers have a lot of room under the cap. They have some injuries.
They do.
Who knows?
Can he play running back?
He could play wide receiver so everyone else can play running back. They're going to miss McCaffrey. They're going to need a weapon. It will be a team that has legitimate Super Bowl aspirations.
Yes.
The Buffalo Bills come to mind as well.
Uh-huh.
Because of their need at the position after Stephon Diggs left. They're relying on a rookie. You could see him paired with Josh Allen, and goodness sakes, that possibility scary.
I saw a story. They had 19 names. They had 19 different teams that really should make the move, and they could make the move. Yeah,
and it tells you a lot about what the Bears are looking at with their weaponry, that they aren't one of them.
I saw another story that suggested that they should trade Keenan Allen to the Chiefs.
Well, I saw that rumored.
Yeah.
That would not...
I mean, it wasn't like a legitimate news story.
Right. I don't think you want to do that.
No.
I don't think you want to entertain that idea either. I don't think you even want to give voice to it.
You think I made a mistake?
No, I don't think you made a mistake. But I saw that out there too, but I don't think that it makes a lot of sense. And
no, it doesn't.
And the only reason that it was even rumored is because Ryan Poles worked in Kansas City.
Well, that's...
And they need a wide receiver.
They do?
Yes.
And they got a guy they're paying 20-something million to that they could save that money for what?
Chiefs need a wide receiver, but they can get to the Super Bowl without one. I just think it would be easier for them if they got Devontae Adams and figured out the salary cap later. Like when they're figuring out where to put the third Super Bowl trophy.
Third in a row. All right, 312-644-6767. Hey, we got Joe O. We're going to get to Joe next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Money, 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 money.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Love our chance to talk to Joe O, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check him out. Aturo.com. He is Joe Ostrowski, brought to you by the great folks at BetQL. Joe, how are you, buddy? What's going on?
Good morning, fellas. Figured I'd start with this. We know about the Chris Sale scratch in Game 2 on Monday, which was a regular season game, which did matter to some bettors here. I received an email from a Sox fan, his name Bobby, a Score listener, and he said, Joe, this has to be the worst beat of all time. I'm sitting on a 140-1 Chris Sale strikeout leader ticket. All I need is one more start to think of all the things I've endured. Chris Sale finishes second in strikeouts in baseball behind Skubal. Oh. Three strikeouts. Cease was one behind Sale. All these former Sox up there. Crochet was up there. Rodon as well. But three back. All he needed is one more start, and he loses on that 140-1.
Oh, boy. That's a tough one. That's a tough reality to take.
Bad beat.
Joe, can we jump to the NFL for a second? I wonder if there are any odds, any conversation. What about the Devontae Adams' next home? We were just talking about what the Raiders will do and where he might be headed. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if he goes somewhere else, if that move ends up happening, obviously there will be a reaction in the betting market. And the big story, of course, Kansas City. It has to be. All the injuries they've had, they're still sitting there 4-0. They're finding ways to get it done, but in the betting world, they're not doing it by margin. They're not covering these large point spreads. Like this weekend was a push for most spots against the Chargers. But yeah, as they've piled up, that's the obvious one. There's also been chatter about some other spots. You know, if the season feels like it's over for the Dolphins already. So are they going to trade or make any sort of a move with their upper echelon receivers as well? So, you know, scoring has been at a premium. The quarterback play, not the best right now. Chiefs still your favorite for the Super Bowl because of the record. But yeah, that's something people are keeping an eye on. Yes, quarterback, of course, means the most. But this past week, when it was announced that Devontae Adams was out and Max Crosby, the Raiders went from a favorite to an underdog against Cleveland. So he's still, you know, you imagine him in a great offense with a top-notch quarterback. That could be scary.
What the Bears getting 3.5 at home against Carolina? I guess Carolina's a lot better with the Red Rifle, huh?
Yeah, Bears are, let's say, a 3.5-point favorite right now. It's a total of 42 against Carolina. You expect the Bears to be favored and by more than a field goal. They're better. Andy Dalton revenge game. I mean, they're certainly able to at least score. The Bears defense, much different than what Carolina saw a week ago. I thought Cincinnati's defense was going to be better this year. That is not the case at all so far. You know, I think we're looking at potentially, this is crazy to say, when you think of where we were a week ago, potentially another Swift game, because the Panthers defense, pretty poor to begin with, probably bottom five in the league, and they're dealing with some key injuries. Their nose tackle, Shy Tuttle, one of their inside linebackers, Jewel, very key to that defense. So might be in a position where the Bears could run on them, give that offensive line a little bit of confidence once again. But yeah, Bears minus 3.5. They look to be in a pretty good spot here once again with injuries on the other side.
College or NFL, Joe, what's your best bet this weekend?
Oh, man. I got to say, NFC North, we do have a new favorite. I've been in on Minnesota from the start, and they're still making them as a dog week to week. They are now the favorite in the NFC North. I think that's worth mentioning, that they've overtaken the Lions, even though the Lions put up all of those points on Monday night. I would say, you know, Buffalo at Houston is a really good spot. The Texans still have not covered a point spread. They seem to be a little bit overvalued. People looking at them as one of those top tier teams, still not covering point spreads. I think Buffalo ends up bouncing back there. I like the Colts if it's Flacco. So I'm going to wait on that. They're an underdog against a desperate Jacksonville team. You know, Jordan Love, after getting back in the swing of things, he looked pretty strong in that second half. So I think the Packers -3 at the LA Rams seems to be a pretty good look. College, it's not a great slate of games, guys. Honestly, it's not. You know, James Franklin's always good for keeping the fans happy and covering the point spread. They take on UCLA. They did not cover against Illinois. Mm-hmm. So home game there, I could certainly see that. And, yeah, so there's been a lot of movement in the Heisman Trophy as well. Guys, this might be the Travis Hunter year. If they can just win enough games, he's already the second favorite now. If they can, say, win 8 games, Travis Hunter has a legit chance. I mean, people look at the Heisman now. It's quarterback, just like NFL MVP. Not necessarily when you have an outlier like that.
This segment with Joe Ostrowski brought to you by Great Clips. It's gonna be great. Thank you, Joe. That's great stuff.
Good stuff, Joe.
You got it, guys.
Yeah, I mean, a guy's a two-way player. Don't you have to take that into account, even if he's not a quarterback?
He's the best football player in college football.
Holy cow.
This year so far. Could be
the endurance it takes to do that.
Concentration, the focus, playing two premium positions. And you can debate which one he will be better at in the NFL, but it's way too early for that. Yeah. Just enjoy what he's accomplishing at a pretty high level.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.